This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, we'll get to the new contracts for Texans players. One new Texan, one more existing Texan gets some more money here. We'll get to that. Coming off of headlines where we actually spent more time talking about Altuve than anything else. Altuve made another error in left field last night, dropping a routine fly ball. Text message to the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. The Astros are going to start making us hate Altuve like they made us start hating Martin Maldonado.
Oh, I don't. No, they will not. They will not. We'll hate the Astros. We'll start either hating Dana Brown or Jim Crane or whomever else. A bunch of people are going to try to throw Bagwell into the mix somehow, some way, before we ever start hating Altuve. And I would point to this, our long, long, long history of ignoring unconscionably bad base running errors by Jose Altuve. Yeah. I mean, Little League. This is why I agree and understand the suggestion that, hey, these errors that Altuve have made, the last two have involved him potentially having to throw a guy out at home. Because it seems like it should be a simple fix, especially for a guy that's still, you know, he's learning the position and everything. He's just got to transfer that skill of playing second base where you focus on making the catch first and then make the throw. Mm-hmm. He's just got to transfer that skill to the outfield. My one hesitation with that is that Altuve, as a short-armed guy, has made really good. He's turned a weakness into a strength with his short arms. One is at the plate. He gets around on the ball really quickly. It's an advantage to having short arms mm-hmm. at the plate. He's yeah. turned it into an advantage. In the infield, he doesn't have good arm strength, but man, he's got a really quick release when he transfer and release. The short arms help him in that regard.
Yeah.
When he's in the outfield and he knows he's got to load up for a long throw and it's a longer motion, I just think for a 35-year-old, there are way more moving parts than just seeing the ball into your glove and taking it step by step.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot at the highest level of the sport. And when somebody's struggling with something that should be a simple fix, I think the question should be, all right, then why, if it's such a simple fix, then why is he having the issue?
Yep.
So I hesitate to think that it's quite that simple.
I think if he keeps hitting, then there's going to be no hate for Jose Altuve. There's not the bar, the expectations are so low on what it's going to actually look like when it's at its best. You know, Altuve's best in left field. Not the being the best left fielder, the best that Altuve is capable of. I don't think the expectations are very high. Now, the expectations are that you catch the ball when it comes to you. That does need to get fixed. But I don't have any sort of notion that he's going to have massive range. I know he's, for age 35, he's still a pretty fast player. I don't have any expectation that he's going to rival Jake Meyers in terms of the ground that he covers out there. It's left field, so you don't need to. The arm, my expectation with the arm strength is at serious low level. So that's like, So my expectations in the field are not very high. If you keep hitting, there will be no hate. And I don't think there's going to be any hate anyways. I can't get myself to a place where the level of play for Jose Altuve makes me dislike Jose Altuve. I'm with
right.
you. I'm with you. I think especially when it comes to him playing left field, the blame will be more on the organization for putting the roster into a spot where it's necessary that he play left field than hate on Jose Altuve for doing it poorly. They're asking him to do something that he's not equipped to do.
Well, and we'll also see exactly how much he plays out there and how they manage the DH and everything else that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So it's a work in progress. Okay, you talked me off the ledge a little bit.
Okay.
And I do think The fun thing is going to be that he's going to get a huge ovation every time he does anything routine in left field.
Yeah, that's true.
For a while. The first week, I think there will be standing ovations for the simplest of plays. People will be happy just for the novelty of it.
I hope he's making plays out there, man. It would be badass. It'd be badass if he actually turned himself into just an average if he turned himself into a left fielder that doesn't get discussed.
Yeah.
Out as, you know, whose defense doesn't get talked about. That would be a win. You know,
well, like Yordan when he was in left field.
Yes,
you know, we all anticipated or feared the worst, and it ended up being like, okay, yeah, all right, yeah, he's totally passable out there.
If he's Yordan in left field, that is a major win. That's a major win.
I keep trying to remind myself of the old Moneyball story of the year where Scott Hatteberg, who's a catcher, transitioned to first base, and he was awful at first base defensively, and then over the course of a season, he figured it out.
Yeah, you get better. You can text in 713-572-4610. So the big news yesterday for the Texans, we'll work backwards chronologically. Danielle Hunter gets a one-year $35.6 million extension. I like this a lot. This is something you and I had been kind of clamoring for, Seth, since the new league year. Well, really since before the new league year started, when we were talking about, hey, what are the moves this team could make, not just in free agency, but with the existing roster. I don't know what the cap effect is for doing something like this. The $35.6 million is nearly entirely guaranteed, just like the first $50 million that Danielle Hunter got from the Texans. I think at its core, this is two things. It keeps one of your best players around for another year, keeps another key piece of the core of that defense. The best players on this defense are all signed up, other than Jalen Petrie, who's got 1 year left on his deal. The best players on this defense, the seven or eight guys that make up the core of this defense, are all here for at least 2 or 3 years, or in the case of Derek Stingley, longer than that. That's number one. Number two, I think that and the Stingley extension send a great message to other guys that are hoping to get paid by the Texans eventually. If you put your head down, do your work, come in, play well, most importantly, you're going to get paid. The team's going to reward you.
Yeah, now, Jalen Petrie is an interesting one because he's eligible for an extension that... You know, the play from year to year and scheme to scheme has been very up and down, but last year they seem to have found the perfect role for him. I think that he's going to get, if he gets an extension before the beginning of the season, I think it makes a whole lot of sense, especially because I think they can get him for, I don't want to say far below free agency value, but he might be a guy that they really love. They want to keep him around, but they've got realistic reasons to not pay him at the top of the market. Yeah. So it might end up being a really good deal for him. Like, it wouldn't be as lucrative as the Nico Collins deal was last year. And I think it'll all be very congenial. I don't think that Jalen Petrie's not in a position to demand a new contract or anything. But they might end up coming to a number that makes sense for both sides.
Yeah, the safety contracts we've seen this offseason have been in that neighborhood of like 15, the tippy top of the market. Like Javon Holland got that $15 million deal from the Giants. Like I don't even think Jalen's in that. I think if you Jalen Petrie, 3 years, $30 million. Would you do it?
Yeah.
3 years, $30 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
100%.
Yeah, I wonder if Jalen would. I wonder if he wants to play it out and see how it goes. So, but that's the only one. Everybody. So, Seth. I mean, you and I have both been in lockstep on this one. You like this Danielle Hunter extension that they're doing?
I like it a lot. I am a huge fan of signing guys up to short term deals, and it takes a boatload of guaranteed money to do it. The players have clamored for guaranteed money, and without understanding that, like you. The guaranteed money is out there if you just sign a shorter term deal. Mm-hmm. So I like that they've done that with Danielle Hunter twice now, 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Nick was making it rain yesterday, man. Danielle Hunter gets nearly $36 million tacked onto his deal, and Cam Robinson, 1 year, $12 million coming in
so
to tackle.
With Cam Robinson, I know the immediate hot take, and an understandable one, is, wait a second, you're replacing Laremy Tunsil, one of the best pass protectors in the game, for Cam Robinson, who had a rough go of it in Minnesota after a midseason trade, but has been about an average offensive tackle in his career. I am very much a fan of the old Bill James sabermetrics theory.
Ooh,
here,
which bringing is baseball that, into it. I like
well,
it.
Well, yeah. The old theory that, man, having a roster full of average players can be really competitive if you focus on their strengths. the Texans were in a situation last year where they had one guy who's a Pro Bowl, perennial Pro Bowler at left tackle. They had a right tackle that's he's fine as an offensive tackle. I don't think he's lived up to his contract. But then they had a lot of really, really substandard performances on the interior. I think first and foremost, you got to get yourself to competent. And having five average offensive linemen, if they're well coached and if the scheme utilizes their skills appropriately, they can be way better than the worst offensive line in the league. And then when it comes to making them a genuinely formidable offensive line, that's where the draft comes in. This was not a good year to go out and spend big money on offensive tackles in free agency. Neither, both for the Texans because of their cap situation, but also just because the crop wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. So you've got guys like Dan Moore making $20 million per year in Tennessee. Good for Tennessee. I'm glad you spent that money idiotically.
Yeah.
So Cam Robinson, I don't think you should put him in ink as a starter at left tackle, but I think it's going to be a competitive situation if they draft the guy in the first round for sure. But I'll feel better as long as the one little detail of, Cole Popovich better be a good offensive line coach and Nick Caley better be a good offensive coordinator.
That's the bet.
Then it's all for naught.
Yep, that's the bet. They're betting on coaching with a lot of this, at least in the short term in 2025. This time of year, you know, with the NCAA basketball tournament, or really all year long, they do that thing on ESPN called bracketology, where they put what they think the tournament's going to look like week to week to week, and they do it right up until the selection Sunday, and this is what we think it's going to look like. I feel like, Seth, we're gonna, as with each time the Texans make an acquisition on the offensive line, I feel like we play a game of bracketology, which is sort of like, okay, if it were week one tomorrow, you know, same way bracketology, if the NCAA tournament started tomorrow, this would be the 64-team bracket. If week one were tomorrow and we were playing offensive line-otology here, what would your left-to-right offensive line look like with the group that's in the building right now for the Texans?
I would go, it's tough because, all right, this is where I would go. I would go, most likely scenario is Cam Robinson at left tackle.
Yep.
Tytus Howard at left guard.
Okay.
Jarrett Patterson at center.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Ingram has played left guard the majority of his career. I don't think he's played right guard much at all, but I like him better overall as a player. I like Laken Tomlinson, as a player more than Ed Ingram.
Yeah.
So Laken Tomlinson has played left guard in his career mostly. Maybe Ed Ingram goes, or maybe Laken Tomlinson goes to right guard,
yep,
and then Blake Fisher at right tackle.
Okay, so you would go Robinson left tackle, Howard left guard, Patterson center, and you're saying Laken Tomlinson right guard, even though he's not played there very
possibly,
much.
Possibly, yeah. I don't know. If it works for him there, I'm not sure if they'd like that or not.
Okay.
And then Blake Fisher at
Blake
right
Fisher
tackle.
At right tackle. So still sitting off to the side are Ed Ingram, Juice Scruggs. It's interesting. Juice Scruggs.
And I would say it's going to be competitive at center. I think they need to give them a genuine chance to compete.
Yeah.
For a team that preaches competition,
yeah,
it still befuddles me as to why Kenyon Green was etched in stone as the starter at left guard,
yeah,
and Juice Scruggs was etched in stone as the starter at center last year. It really didn't. If we were genuinely trying to establish culture, I didn't get that, because that offensive line needs culture and competition, and those two young guys were just handed their position.
No, I'm just playing.
At least that's the way it looked.
I'm just playing the bracketology game, so you know they do like last four out, like last two out. Ed Ingram and Juice Scruggs. Sorry, work your way onto the bracket, fellas. So how are we feeling if that's the offensive line? Does that fit the bill of what you're talking about? Five average guys being able to go out and do their thing.
It does, potentially.
If they're well coached. Coaching
and scheme is the huge, huge part of it.
Yep.
It's coaching, scheme, play calling, all of that. So there's a lot on Cole Popovich and Nick Caley. They've got, which obviously you always have a lot to prove in any given year. I'd be very neutral on that. I'd be very much in wait and see
mode. Let's see. Yeah. Seth Walder gave the Cam Robinson signing a B+ on ESPN. And the thought process behind most of it is like, okay, at least they're better. The Texans got rid of Laremy Tunsil, so they are better today than they were yesterday, because who knows what the left tackle solution was. But Walder does point out, like, it was rough at times for Cam Robinson in Minnesota last year. I mean,
yeah,
they have brought in a bunch of guys who, at least by the advanced metrics, did not protect the passer well last year.
Well, yeah, and I think with Cam Robinson, I would go back to more his track record in Jacksonville, where he was an average offensive tackle. Didn't live up to his draft status or anything like that, but he was an average offensive tackle. He played very well against the Texans in his career. Probably his best opponent, unfortunately for us, but not that they've had a hard time with the Jaguars. But he's not Laremy Tunsil as a pass protector, but he is Laremy Tunsil as a run blocker, which is a bad thing. He's not a great run blocker.
Yeah.
So it's a one-year deal. I mean, there's no part of a one-year deal up to $14 million. That's the key. I don't know how much they're paying him and how much is based on incentives in terms of starting or playtime or what have you.
$12 million has been the reported baseline. Like, the baseline salary is $12 million.
He's going to make $12 million.
He's going to make $12 million, okay. Yeah. That's been the report.
But it's a one-year deal, so there's nothing about this that says, oh, yeah, he's definitely your starter at left tackle.
Yeah.
There could be a situation where Tytus Howard's playing left tackle.
Okay. I think you're right about that. Does this affect the way the Texans approach the draft? I think that you and I have been talking since they got rid of Tunsil last week, and I think a lot of the experts have looked at it this way too, is that, oh, they got to go offensive line at 25th, or and maybe not got to, but the percentage chance that they do and that they need to with the 25th pick certainly increased once Laremy left the building without knowing what solutions Nick Caserio had up his sleeve. Does Cam Robinson for 1 year affect at all the way they should approach the draft?
No, God, no. Okay. No. And when it comes to, if you're an advocate of taking the best player available, that comes with all kinds of asterisks. I think that Nick genuinely likes to take not a single best player available, but he wants to get into a band of players.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way the draft is shaking out with offensive linemen this year, at least so far in mock drafts, is that when you get down to 25, there's probably going to be a pretty good band of offensive linemen that he feels good about. And if you take the best offensive lineman available at that point, or maybe you maneuver up or down a little bit, I think it makes a lot of sense that they take an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
The everything about this strategy this offseason is that, from D'Amico saying we need to reset the offensive line at the combine, the moves they've made in free agency are largely ones that look like, hey, we want to be sure we don't have a glaring need at a specific position. And then in the draft, that's where you really genuinely start to build up a solid, above average offensive line or a championship caliber offensive line.
Yeah. I want an offensive lineman, I think, with that first round pick, whether they stick at 25 and pick one, or if they target one that gets to, you know, if a guy that they like, Tyler Booker, or maybe it's a tackle, it's Will Campbell, maybe somebody like that, starts to drift into the teens, do they use some of that Laremy Tunsil draft capital to move up? I've still got offensive line ranked as the first thing I want with that. That said, and he was in the building yesterday over there at NRG Stadium, right out the window, Matthew Golden, wide receiver for Texas. Matthew Golden would be my cheat day, my unexpected cheat day. You know, like, and not every day is a cheat day for me, but let's pretend that I had one of those discipline regimens where you're trying to eat right every day. You know it's good for you, but everybody throws a cheat day in once a week. You know, the offensive linemen are the regular sort of regimen. You know, the skinless chicken breast and the green veggies and things like that. But now all of a sudden, Matthew Golden's been presented to me. Oh. Change of plans. Today is the cheat day. Give me my Matthew Golden. I'll eat the good stuff in day two and three of the draft.
That's where the real best player available strategy gets tested, is that maybe you feel like, all right, listen, we'd like to get ourselves to a spot where wherever we're picking, there's a good group of offensive linemen and we can take the best player available at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got a really high grade on Matthew Golden and he falls to 25 and you didn't think he would, then I'm A-okay with them pulling the trigger on Matthew Golden. It might set us up well emotionally, in that probably the majority of Texans fans really want them to draft an offensive lineman. But if they do draft somebody that other than an offensive lineman, it might be somebody that's fallen further than we expected.
How should we frame this? We did this yesterday with Longhorn fans, and we got some really good texts on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. You suggested we ask Longhorns what they think of Kelvin Banks Jr. And we got some good texts, and I think more people, I don't know that I saw any negative texts on him. I think we saw some that were like, he's probably more of a guard than a tackle, but nobody was like, no, the guy's trash.
Right.
Matthew Golden is also a Longhorn. He's also a Coug.
Yeah.
Do we do we? I want to solicit opinion on Matthew Golden. Do we do it just soliciting opinion in a silo on Matthew? Should they take him at 25 instead of an offensive lineman, or should I don't want to do one where we're comparing him and Kelvin Banks because that's not the argument really in a draft. It's
no. Like, all we no like the mine. The way I look at it is yes, in a silo, like when you're evaluating a prospect, a lot of times. The college fans who have watched a guy for several years will be the ones to tell you, like, no, actually, I can bring up seven instances where in a big moment he screwed up.
Yeah.
And that sometimes the scouting reports from the guys who are watching 400 different prospects don't feel those moments the same way. So, yeah, just what do you think of Matthew Golden?
Is Matthew Golden worth taking over an offensive lineman? What do you think of Matthew Golden? Yes. Okay, so what
Well, that's not what I said, but, yeah. but like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
No, I just want to know what they think about Matthew Golden
in
general.
I got you. Okay, so what do you think of Matthew Golden? Longhorns who've watched, or Cougs who watched him play at the University of Houston.
Are there any negatives, or is there anything that we should be concerned about with Matthew Golden?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, there you go. All right, 713-572-4610. If Matthew Golden could be a number two, that would be nice. Do we feel like Nico Collins, is there enough out there? Is Christian Kirk enough to take attention away from Nico Collins? This was Greg Cosell, I believe, on the Ross Tucker podcast, talking about the importance of a second wide receiver in today's NFL.
I think it's absolutely critical because with the way defenses play now, with a lot more split safety, it becomes easier to bracket, double, whatever term you want to use, a number one receiver without just within the context of your defensive structure. So now you think of it this way. It is always possible to double two receivers if you want to. Obviously, that changes your whole defensive feel and how you do other things. But teams don't really do that. So they'll try to double one in specific situations, and you certainly see that with the big-time receivers. You see it with Chase at times. You see it with Justin Jefferson. You know, you see it with A.J. Brown at times. But if you have that number two receiver that's really, really good, and Higgins, my guess is, for a number of teams in the league, would be seen as a number one for some teams in the league for sure, then it just gets harder.
Okay. So that's the Texans had two wide receiver twos last year to go with Nico Collins, you know.
Yeah.
Now the question is, do they even have half a wide receiver two in Christian Kirk? Is he enough?
Yeah, you know, he is. And I think you don't want to get too rigid about exactly how an offense is composed and whether you've got, you know, wide receiver one on the outside, wide receiver two on the outside, wide receiver three in the slot. That I think Christian Kirk can be a remedy to hopefully a lot of the things that we saw underutilized last year, which was if teams are just taking the top off the offense by playing cover two and being sure that Nico Collins can't hit you deep, why are you not carving them up underneath? Why? Why are you not doing it, especially with Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell? And I put that more on Bobby Slowick than Stephon Diggs or Tank Dell. I mean, Stephon Diggs was still getting great separation. They just, I don't think they were utilizing him as well as they should have, given what they were seeing on defense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not overly concerned about it because there's plenty of really good offenses that have a stud wide receiver, a really viable second receiver, and then complementary pieces off of it. But you should always be trying to add more. It's just not my biggest hot point or sensitive point right now.
All right, we're getting a couple texts in here on Matthew Golden, who visited the Texans yesterday.
Go ahead. Let me anticipate and guess what Longhorns are saying about Matthew Golden.
Okay.
The couple negatives that I had seen about him were that, one, he doesn't really work back to the ball at times. He just sort of sits and waits for it. And the other is that sometimes when he's a secondary route or he's covered, it just feels like he's not running the route full speed.
Okay.
That's something that people get pretty sensitive about when they pick up on it as fans.
Here's what we have so far from the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. Golden can be a great 1-2 punch with Nico, like T. Higgins and Jamar Chase.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's high praise.
Yeah.
Next one. Yeah, Matthew Golden was a number two that emerged as a number one in Texas. Great hands, great route running, great body control. The only thing that his game is lacking is size. He's around 5'11". That's what I thought you were going to say. He is not undersized. He's not tanked down.
I'm looking for the stuff that they might have just the negatives that they would have picked up on if they're watching every single
every
week,
snap. You know? Yeah. My concern with Matthew Golden is he isn't part of the O line. But I'd like him. I'd like him. There's still some rolling in that we can get to. Hey, you mentioned Diggs. Diggs is visiting the Patriots. I think today. I think I saw the article. He visited yesterday, or he's visiting today. One or the other.
I'm trying to remember that this isn't the Bill Belichick Patriots and that it's going to be Vrabel's own deal.
There's a Sean Payton effect going on with the Patriots. Remember with Sean Payton where if you forget that he wasn't the coach for like 2 years?
And people were still talking about the Saints like they were run by Sean Payton. It was really, really weird.
I'm having that glitch with the Belichick thing like you just said with them.
Yeah, where you're like, oh yeah, he's a Patriots type of guy. Oh, okay, well, wait a second. They're two coaches removed from Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Vrabel's got a certain amount of Belichick in him.
Yes.
And I think probably likes and respects the same kind of football players. And if you ignore all the social media stuff over the last several years, Stephon Diggs feels like a Belichick type of guy. And he feels a little bit like a Vrabel type of guy by that same extension. Given the way he practices, the way he cares about practicing, this is something that I can remember Peyton Manning talking about his wide receivers. And I think at the time he was specifically talking about Marvin Harrison. But that one of the things he respected most about Marvin Harrison was that how adamant Harrison was about being out there at practice and having to be at practice. Because for a quarterback, it's really hard to develop that timing and rhythm without just rep after rep after rep and seeing things through the same set of eyeballs. And I think Stephon Diggs, it seemed from the outside looking in, he's wired very much like that. And you can ignore any of the drama or what have you. He's that kind of guy. I think that I could totally see Vrabel being really enticed by Stephon Diggs, but he's got to see what he looks like with his ACL.
With the ACL, the ACLs would be, to me, the ACL is by far the biggest question mark when it comes to Diggs. I'm based on what I saw and you saw out of training camp last year and what we saw in the 8 games that Diggs played for the Texans. I think, obviously, depending on the price tag, if it's a reasonable price tag, I think it'd be a really, really good signing for the Patriots. They've got the money to overpay him if he needs to be slightly overpaid. They need wide receiver help. Their number one wide receiver right now, who is it, Kendrick Bourne? Like, I have no idea who they're... Like, they have it's about as nondescript... What is it? Kayshawn Boutte is probably their number one guy right now. I have no idea. They've got one of the most nondescript receiving cores. It's a young team that could use some leadership. Might be good for Drake May.
A lot of people were wondering if Stephon Diggs showing up to the rodeo a couple weeks ago, and dressed in cowboy gear, or at least Western gear, whether that was a sign or a tell that he was coming back to Houston.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody, I didn't know anything about it, but I just randomly saw some comment of somebody saying, like, you don't dress up in rodeo gear unless you want to be a Houstonian. I don't know. Stephon Diggs likes to dress up a lot of different ways. I think that he's probably just waiting to, you know, for his lease to run out in Houston. So he's like, yeah, okay, I had 2 months left on the lease. They were going to make me pay it anyway, so I'm going to say hang around in Houston until it's time.
Does Stephon Diggs seem like a guy who wouldn't wear Western gear walking through Times Square in Manhattan? I think he'd be perfectly comfortable wearing that outfit in any of the 50 states around the country.
I think him discovering the existence of rhinestones was probably one of the great moments in his life.
Yes.
Oh, rhinestones? Yeah. I didn't even know about this whole look. Yeah, let's do this thing.
Do you feel like the ship has absolutely sailed with Stephon Diggs at this point for the Texans? I do.
I think so. Yeah, just given the way they've spent pretty judiciously on acquisitions. They've been very generous with the renegotiations, but when it comes to the acquisitions, they're being somewhat frugal. And not that you'd have to pay a boatload to get Stephon Diggs, but I think it's a classic. If the number were right, then yes, but he's probably going to get more somewhere else.
Cam Robinson's by far their biggest free agency signing. You know, all the other money that's been spent, you know, Christian Kirk was not a signing, that was a trade. You know, these Stingley and Hunter deals are obviously extensions. C.J. Gardner-Johnson is making $9-10 million a year. He was a trade. The biggest signing they had made until yesterday, I think, if I'm not mistaken, was Sheldon Rankins, 1 year, $7 million. You know,
I'm looking at Stephon Diggs' rodeo outfit, and I'm impressed with the tassels. He went big with Taz. He's got a leather coat on with just a like really long tassels, peacocking to the max in that regard. I'm a little let down by the belt buckle. I'm sure it's like a $10,000 belt buckle, but it's just not gaudy enough.
It's not ostentatious enough.
There are no rhinestones or anything else on it.
Is it big? I don't have this in front of me. You do. Is it not by
belt buckle standards. Yeah. Not by rodeo belt buckle standards. It's big. It's bigger than what you or I would wear.
Sure.
But it's probably five times bigger than the one you wore to your speaking engagement yesterday. but it's not all that flashy. But otherwise, it's a nice outfit. It looks like he's wearing genuine black denim jeans.
Yeah.
Not some kind of fancy material or something.
He was getting after it, man. He was pretty happy to be in that gear, it looked like, if I remember the video correctly. He looks pretty happy. Okay, here we go. More Matthew Golden text. Matthew Golden is savvy like a European point guard, somebody says. Savvy. He's got good brains. Matthew Golden is a bulkier Xavier Worthy. Great receiver, just can't do much when Ewers is throwing him the ball. Wait.
Quinn Ewers
is to Longhorn fans what Kellen Mond was to Aggie fans a few years ago.
Yeah. Except that a Kellen Mond, I feel like people were making more of a case for Kellen Mond nationally or trying to talk about him as a potential sleeper and all that. There were a few notable people who I remember thinking, like, you guys are going to be shocked by what Kellen Mond does in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that about yours necessarily.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good dynamic there too, that he did a lot without having a great quarterback thrown to him. It's really hard to find much negativity about Matthew Golden. If he were there at 25 and the Texans took him, I wouldn't be crying into my Cheerios about how they didn't take an offensive line lineman. So that's confirmation by the college fan base. Sometimes will be the first to tell you exactly how they see it and trash one of their own prospects if they feel it. But so far, people are pretty positive about Matthew Golden.
Yes, they are. So you can keep texting 713-572-4610. Random question about the Astro jerseys. Are they the new everyday jerseys this year? Or are they going to be worn at random? The jerseys that this texter is talking about are the new City Connect uniforms. Did you happen to see these on social yesterday?
I did. They're beautiful.
You like them? I like them so much better than the ones they've been wearing the last couple of years. I didn't squawk about it a lot on here, their uniforms, but I was, when they'd wear them on Mondays at home, and I would assume that that's going to be the same thing, that the Monday home games will be the City Connect games. These are way better.
These are 400 times better.
The dark colors head to toe look like pajamas to me.
It looked like they were trying way too hard. Yeah. It was the classic thing. They might as well have been that guy that wears the astronaut helmet that's too small at Astros games. It's like, okay, I see what you're going for, but what the hell are you doing? Now, with that guy, I admire that guy.
I hope he's a listener.
He knows it. Well, he knows it looks goofy. Yeah. It's fun. It's a funny look. But he wouldn't wear it out to play professional baseball in front of people. And yet with those City Connects, like, you guys are just trying. Are you trying to make it look futuristic? And then, you know what it ended up looking like, Sean? It looked like Epcot Center, where it was what people thought the future was going to look like in 1970.
Yeah.
What does somebody from 1970 think the future is going to look like? They might as well have gone back in time and said to somebody in 1970, design me a baseball uniform from the future.
Right.
And that's what they gave you, which would have looked cool in 1970.
Yeah.
But it looks dumb now.
And the font.
Like it was like any rusty old monorail from a world expo from the 1980s.
I didn't realize you felt so strongly about those uniforms, man. That was
I didn't like them.
I didn't either.
They didn't look like anything. They were trying too hard and yet not hard enough all at once.
Yeah, I just didn't like the colors. Like dark blue head to toe. Ugh. No, these are good. If you haven't seen them, go find them. There's pictures of Jose Altuve, left fielder, wearing them. Yordan wearing. They're white. They're basically now white from head to sock. They're still using the same socks if you choose to go sock up to the knee like Altuve does, where it's kind of that orange and yellow blend.
Now, I did like the guys that wore their socks high.
Yes.
With I did like the guys who wore their socks
with
high.
With the old ones. I agree with
because
you.
Because it wasn't just so monochromatic.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I've learned. I like monochromatic in football. I despise it in baseball.
Yeah.
Other than white, obviously.
Yeah.
And you know what? In cream. Cream? You want to put cream on a baseball uniform?
Yeah.
Why don't you just put bacon stripes on the back of it, too? And like, oh, yeah, let's look at it as dingy as possible.
Yeah.
Oh.
The one complaint that I've seen from people is the cap has an A for the logo on it, and it looks a little too much like the Arizona Diamondbacks logo. Like the Arizona Diamondbacks regular logo, the A on the City Connect uniforms for the Astros. It's kind of like the complaint that Texan fans had about the dark home uniforms. Not the Color Rush ones, but like the regular dark blue. And yeah. I think the white with the dark pants, they look too much like the Atlanta Falcons was the big complaint about those. Similarly, they're complaining about the A. I don't get too worked up about that. It says Stros on the jersey. That's kind of kitschy, you know. It doesn't say Astros. It says Stros. You have the nickname on there. They forgot the apostrophe in place of the A that they've omitted. But, yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. All right, mock draft injection time. Are they still giving us offensive linemen? Not this one. A three-round mockaroo that goes off the board for the Houston Texans. What do we think about this? We'll get to that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, mock draft injection time. Does the tenor on the Texans change at all with a Cam Robinson signing? Now, to be fair, I don't know that a lot of the mockers have put out new mocks since that signing. And to the point earlier when I asked Seth, does this change at all? Does this signing alter even slightly how the Texans should be approaching the draft? Seth, you said absolutely not. They should be looking at the draft through the same lens today as they were at the beginning of the day yesterday.
I think that Nick, like a lot of GMs, wants to go into the draft where you don't feel extreme pressure to draft for need or to fill a spot, because that's a dicey way to go through life. Even in the first round, you got about a 50% hit rate. And even some of those guys, some of the 50% who become everyday starters don't do it their rookie year. So it's almost like it's a bad bet. You probably got less than a 50% chance, even with your first round, of getting a guy who's going to be a good starter in year one. So you want to go in and take the guy that you really feel has the best potential to become a good pro long term. And then you take the best player available, but you can coax that a little bit and maneuver it to where, all right, if we had our way, if we had our druthers, we'd like to be in a spot in the draft where there's a bunch of really good offensive linemen available.
Yeah.
We'll get some, maybe we trade back and get some compensation or whatever. So you still take the best player available, but you game the system a little bit. And I think that's, with Cam Robinson, I can envision an offensive line where, if they're well coached, if Cole Popovich is a good assistant, a good offensive line coach, and if Nick Caley is a good offensive coordinator, that you can be much improved over last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the ceiling is. I wouldn't act like, oh wow, this is going to be the 1990 Cowboys or anything like that. But you can be a functioning offense, especially if your wide receiver, your running back, and your quarterback play well, without feeling desperate to get an offensive lineman.
All right, so let's see what you think of this one. This is Chris Trapasso, CBSSports.com. He does a three-round mock. We'll touch on all the picks he makes in this three-round mock, but obviously we'll focus out of the chute on the first round. And this is one that I guess would put the best player available theory really to the test.
Yeah.
With several players at positions of higher need for the Texans on the board, some that we've talked about at great length on this show, with the 25th overall pick in the Chris Trapasso CBSSports.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Jaylon Walker, edge rusher, Georgia.
I have
seen him routinely going in the top 8 to 12 in most drafts.
Right. But part of that best player available is, okay, is it a guy that fits what you like to do?
Yeah.
And they're not starting this defense out from scratch. He's a tweener. He's like 240 pounds.
Yep.
And there could be a place for him as a pass rusher, but I don't need a Sam linebacker / edge rusher potentially, yeah, or vice versa on this defense. D'Amico likes big classic 4-3 defensive ends that can play the run and be pass rushers. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, given the way D'Amico Ryans likes to play defense, that you would take him. So no, my disgust with that pick isn't about the prospect himself. It's more about that, no, that's that it's not the type of guy that the Texans would want to spend a first round pick on. If he was available in the second or third round, then you look at him and you think, okay, maybe this guy can be a situational pass rusher. Mm-hmm. We do something. But D'Amico has said he wants guys who can be day one starters, and I don't think he's a day one starter in this defense.
Not on this defense, no. And this would be with Here's some names still on the board. Emeka Ibuka, still on the board. Luther Burden III, still on the board. Gray Zabel, the offensive lineman out of North Dakota State, still on the board. And Josh Simmons, who I feel like we've examined Josh Simmons as much as any player on the big board total in totality this week. The offensive lineman out of Ohio State, who dealt with is coming back from patellar tendon issues, reportedly maturity issues, according to Todd McShay. But yeah. But as far as the film, when healthy, goes, might be the best film out of all these guys we just said.
I think he's the guy that most looks like a pure offensive tackle compared to a lot of those other guys. Yeah. I mean, he's got really good feet. He knows how to get the right angles and keeps after it with good technique, all that. Everything that you see about him in terms of the negatives, one is if D'Amico says that the first rounders for him are guys that they expect or hope will start in year one, he's coming off a patellar tendon tear. NFL players on average take at least a year to come back from that, if not two. The overall long-term prognosis for it isn't great. And then if you stack onto that, it's like Todd McShay says that there might be maturity concerns. So I always take that with a grain of salt. You never know exactly what that might mean. But let's say hypothetically the Texans have the same concerns. Mm-hmm. We know, as they've demonstrated with Derek Stingley and Danielle Hunter just this week, they really, really, really value guys that are mature as hell, that show up and work their butts off. If the Texans have any kind of concerns about the maturity, I think they really don't want to draft a first round pick. They don't want to spend a first round pick on that. So I don't. If that's valid, then I would say it's almost a non-starter. But we don't know if it's valid or not.
Yep.
There's all this pre-draft smoke. Sometimes it's irresponsible. So I don't want to crucify the guy for something that might not be realistic or real.
Yep. Okay. So let's do the other three picks in this 3-round mock real quick. 58th overall pick, Houston Texans select Marcus Mbu.
M-B-O-U. Did you say Mbu?
Mbu. No, not the good. Not
oh,
Mbu.
You said
Mbu. Just Mbu.
Not Mbu.
Not Mbu. Okay. Mbu was long gone the day before.
Oh, yeah.
This would be Marcus.
I feel bad for Marcus
Mbu. Mbu.
Because he's an offensive lineman. He's an offensive lineman who's a second round caliber prospect who's in the same draft year as a guy where the guy who's vaulted up the draft boards is named Mbu.
Mbu. He's just
so
Mbu.
The non Mbu Mbu.
Mbu.
At offensive line.
Yeah,
okay.
So O lineman from Purdue in the second round. The two that they have going in the third round, keep in mind the Texans have 2 third-round picks now thanks to the Laramie Tunsil trade, 79th overall and 89th overall with the 79th overall pick. Ben will like this one. Our producer, Ben Gary, the Texans select Xavier Restrepo, wide receiver, Miami, who's like...
Very nice.
Yeah, man, he's like Braxton Berrios on steroids. He's a really good player. Is he the all-time leading receiver at Miami, Ben?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and last I checked, they've had some good receivers there.
Yeah.
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 So would you be happy with that one?
Yeah. Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome.
He's the biggest thing with Tate, he's a classic small dude,
yeah,
more quick than fast, yep, all that type of stuff. And I think the immediate thought people would have is, wait, you just traded for Christian Kirk, a slot receiver. Without pegging him as a slot receiver specifically, because we saw with Tank Dell lined up more on the outside than inside,
yeah,
but he's a smaller guy. I don't worry about it when it's a third-round draft pick.
Right.
I think that you can point to instances where, yeah, teams have multiple smaller guys. I just don't want to be paying buku money for two guys that are smaller guys. With a third-round pick, I'm cool. You just take the best players available.
Could he be a poor man's Ladd McConkey, I think would be the question. You know, like that kind of guy where, Ladd McConkey doesn't, they move him all over the place and he's shifty and all those good things.
Yeah, or Hunter Renfro, basically any white receiver. Which white receiver is this kid?
Why are you painting it that way? All right, 89th overall pick, the Houston Texans select. Now, this one's interesting, too. Second generation, Mason Taylor, tight end out of LSU. Son of Hall of Fame edge rusher, Jason Taylor.
And so Miami Hurricanes coach.
Is he a Miami Hurricanes coach?
Yeah, he's our D-end coach.
Wow, look at that. Okay, so all these Hurricanes.
I like this mock.
Yeah, Ben, this is your favorite mock, huh, Ben? This mock is enough to get Ben chatting about it in there. I love it.
People are going to get excited about a tight end. The interesting thing there, though, is not that you would shy away from a fourth-round pick if you think he's got potential. But I wonder if you, I wonder if you think, like, you look at Cade Stover, you're still trying to see what you have in him. Mm-hmm. Dalton Schultz isn't going to get cut, no matter how we feel about him and his performance last year. They just re-signed and re-upped Brevin Jordan. I guess the way I think of it is, Brevin Jordan is, he's got much more Evan Ingram in him than being a classic tight end. So you can justify keeping four tight ends if, because you use Brevin Jordan kind of creatively.
Kind of like a weapon.
He's as much a slot receiver as he is an actual tight end.
True.
So, yeah, that would be, and especially in the fourth round, that would be interesting.
Yeah, but it'd actually be third round, but I get your point. Like the fourth.
Oh.
They have 2 third round picks. So, yeah, so it'd be late third, but your point is valid, which is, you know, sometime outside of the first round. Yeah, man. Texans have 4 picks in the top 89. So they got a chance to, as of right now, they move back.
How the hell is Jason Taylor's son getting drafted now? This is, it's been a rough few years for me because all these guys, there's so many sons of NFL players in the league right now, many of whom are my age or younger. And it's annoying me.
It was bad enough for me when Notre Dame was signing kids of players that I went to school with. They just had Julius Jones's son visit the school. Remember Julius Jones, a running back that played for the Cowboys in Notre Dame?
Yeah.
He played for Notre Dame. He was drafted in 2003, I think it was. His son is visiting Notre Dame, yeah.
All right, I'm sure somebody's done a study on this because they have noted that it's just not perception. I think there have actually been way more children of NFL players as of late. So these guys, between the genetics and the training that they're getting by the benefit of the experience of their parents, these guys, more so than in the past, the genetics have always been the genetics, but more so than in the past, you see more guys. But it does seem, you only really notice it when it's a notable or famous player. I wonder, there's probably a boatload more out there guys who, like, their dad's played 3 years in the league and we just don't even know them or anything.
Totally, yeah, and I don't want to find them because I don't need any more players to make me feel older than I am already.
If the Texans sign a player whose father was a big-time bust, I'm going to flip out.
Okay. Ryan Leaf III.
I feel like something Bill O'Brien would do.
Oh, yeah.
Bill O'Brien would use his father's NFL career against him. Because Bill O'Brien loved the pedigree and everything. I feel like O'Brien would, the knife would cut both ways.
Speaking of pedigree, Derek Stingley Jr., he's a third-generation guy. He signed his deal yesterday, met with the media, talked about what it was like for how it felt for the Texans to invest so much in him. We had some fun with him too. He talked about the impact of his dad and what did he do to celebrate. He celebrated in classic Stingley style. We'll get to all of that coming up next.